KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Songs of Strength and Courage on Sunday, February 17th from 3 to 5:30 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church in Portland. The Portland Peace Choir is hosting this year's Joint Peace Choir Concert with Eugene Peace Choir, Inaccord Community Choir, Rogue Valley Peace Choir, and special guests, One World Chorus with Aaron Nigel Smith. Again, that's Songs of Strength and Courage on Sunday, February 17th from 3 to 5:30 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church, 1820 Northeast 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9:01 and time for Veterans Voice. Today, Marvin's going to be talking about suicide in the active duty military and also some discussion of Venezuela. Looking forward to that. At 10 o'clock on Valley Views, host Dale Holliday shares her observations about being a woman who's child-free by choice, and this is the second part of a two-part series. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein spends the entire hour on testimony taken recently in Tucson, Arizona by the United Nations Commission on Refugees. At 11 o'clock Pacific Underground, interviews Duncan Ryukin Williams, author of American Sutra, Story of Faith and Freedom in the Second World War. Williams will be in town for a reading on his from his book on Friday. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO this morning. Let's just go ahead with Veterans Voice.
Well, how do you do, Private Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside? And I'll rest for a while in the warm summer sun. I've been walking all day, Lord, and I'm nearly done. And I see by your gravestone you were only 19 when you joined the Glorious Fallen in 1916. Well, I hope you died quick, and I hope you died clean. Or Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered ye down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? And did you leave a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined? And though you died back in 1916, to that loyal heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name? enshrined behind some glass pane in an old photograph torn and tattered and stained and fade into yellow in a brown leather frame. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? The sun shining now on these green fields of France. The warm wind blows gently and the red poppies dance. The trenches have vanished long under the plow. No gas and no barbed wire, no guns firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses in mute witness stand to man's blind indifference to his fellow man and a whole generation who were butchered and damned. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? And I can't help but wonder, now Willie McBride, do all those who lie here know why they died? Did you really believe them when they told you the cause? Did you really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the suffering, the sorrow, the glory, the shame, the killing, the dying, it was all done in vain. For Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes or the forest?
The Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland and the Vancouver area, and 104.3 FM in the Willamette Valley, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia River Gorge. Are on the World Wide Web at kboo.fm. And you can hear some of our older shows also if you go to kboo.fm/Western Voice. I'm Marvin, and Tammy's our engineer. She goes and pulls all those buttons and switches, and I don't know how to do that. But this is our 28th year here on KBOO. And it's only because of you, the listeners, that keep KBOO running and keep shows like mine on the air. And you can go to kboo.fm and you can go to the right and donate if you want, or you, and join us, be a member, or you can go wait till we do pledge drives and you can also join us. And with what's going on right now, this radio station is probably more important than it has been in a long time, with the craziness in the White House and the craziness going on all around. I'm going to talk about a couple things today, and but first I want to talk about something that's I think is very interesting. A few weekends ago, the so-called Right to Life had their rally downtown at Pioneer Square, and their white, their yellow balloons and all that, and there were a bunch of us that, you know, that don't want the rights of women taken away, and we were walking around and stuff, and also Antifa was there, and I was talking to him and this woman, and I told him who I was and that I wanted to have somebody from Antifa that had been in the military, I'd like to talk to him on our show. And she said she would try to find me somebody, and so far they haven't found anybody. But, you know, Antifa is important because they're on the front lines, you know. They're on the front lines against these fascists and Nazis and Klansmen that come to towns, and Antifa is all over, you know, from Seattle down to Los Angeles, and also in New York and just other places. And they are the shock troops. They're important because they are on the front line, and we need to really support them, because we don't want to happen in America what happened in Germany in 1939, when the Nazis and brown shirts took over. We have to confront these people whenever they come and try to do their spiel. I followed Antifa around for a long time, and I was standing on a corner. I don't remember what corner it was. And when these so-called Right to Life people was coming by, I was telling them to, you know, what about the children in Yemen that are being killed every day by bombs supplied by the United States, you know? And I was just going at them like that. And some of them would go by and say, save all the children. And I said, well, then what are you going to do about this? You know, and they never would answer me. And as I turned around, Antifa folks were, some of the Antifa folks were at the next block, and I looked back, and here come the right, you know, the Nazis and right wingers. They were falling beside the whatever they were, the Right to Lifers or something, and they came and they stopped and they saw Antifa standing over there, and they ran over and to confront Antifa. You know, they started that fight. You know, it wasn't really a fight. It was more of a pushing match and everything, but they started that. And Antifa stood their ground, you know. And it was interesting because I got right in the front, and, you know, told these guys, to, you know, why don't you just get out of Portland, you know? You know, just go back to where you come from. And one of them looked at me and said, I remember you, you know, and I said, I don't care if you remember me. And so they finally left, and Antifa started to walk and go by, and I just followed them for a little bit. Then I had to go. I wanted to go home. So I went and told them I was going home, and this one young woman had been by me with me, and I don't know who she is. She had her black mask and everything on, but she had really bright blue eyes. And as I was getting ready to leave, she told the leader of that group who I was, and we shook hands and hugged, you know. And then she came up to me and says, "Do you want us to walk you to your car?" And I said, "No, I'll be okay." And then I took off to go back up to where my car was, and I got to Pioneer Square, and here was a bunch of them, you know? And there was, like, these cops were there, and I talked to some Antifa people for a while, and I just got, you know, angry. And there was, like, this other little group of people who support Antifa. No, I'm not Antifa, but right-wingers and everything, and there's one guy who was he was a proud boy, you know, and he had the Roman numeral thing on his arm and everything. And so I went right into the, because I knew there was a lot of cops there, so I walked right in the middle of them and started asking them, you know, what are you for? Why do you come here? You know, you know there's going to be trouble when you come, and nobody wants you here. You know, if Portland had known that you guys were coming, there'd be 1,000 people here in the streets. And they never would answer me. And then I just turned around and talked to this one guy, said, "We want to talk to them. They won't sit down and talk to us." And I says, "You have nothing in common. What should Antifa talk to you? You know? You have nothing to talk about. You guys are fascist. You're misogynistic. You're homophobic. You know, you don't like blacks. You don't like Asians. You don't like anybody that's not white." And so one of the guys that we got into a little bit, he walked by and just said something really nasty in my ear, you know. And then he looked around to me and says, "I'd like to sit down and have a beer with you." And I says, "I don't drink." And he says, "We can sit down, and I think we got a lot in common." I says, "I don't think we have anything in common, buddy." And so I thought, well, I better leave. And I turned around. I went to, there was a cop there. And I says, "Why do you put up with these people, you know?" And he didn't say anything to me. And then I started to walk, and there was another cop. And this is the guy. NIIYA. He's the guy that was texting the Patriot prayer folks, you know, and you can read about it in the Willamette Week, or it's on the internet and everything. So they were talking, and so who are the police protecting? You know, they're not protecting us. You know, they're not protecting Antifa. Antifa is protecting people. You know, and so I finally, you know, I just got tired of them. I started to walk away around this little group of them and everything, and they're going, "Thank you for your service and all this," and I just, "Yeah, thank you." And I started walking away. There was one guy was standing there, and he looked at me, and he says, "I think we have more." He had this American flag and all this stuff, and he said, "I think we have more in common than you know. We should sit down and talk. They won't talk to us." And I said, "You don't have anything in common with these guys." And so I took off to go home, and I walked around a little bit and making sure nobody was following me, and had some coffee and looked around really paranoid. And then I went and got in my car and I took off. But I think that they, you know, we cannot let these Nazis and these Proud Boys and these fascists, you know, come in and cause all this trouble. You know, I still remember Greensboro. You know, I talked about it before. When they came, the Klan came and opened their trunks and pulled out guns and started shooting people, you know? So I have this in my brain that I don't forget, that those guys are dangerous. And we have to have, you know, frontline shock troops. And Antifa right now is the frontline shock troops. And, you know, we should, you know, take, you know, support those people. I support them. And I'm going to talk a little bit right now about suicides. Not only is the suicides in the veterans community, but also in active duty troops. The information they didn't break it down in age, or they didn't break it down in nationality, or they didn't break it down in male and female, what I got. And Last year is the last year, 2018. There was 321 active duty troops killed themselves while they were on active duty. You know, that may not sound a lot, but just think of the military. There's only a million, maybe 300,000 in the military. So 321 is a lot of people to, you know, that kill themselves. And the military is saying, you know, we try all this stuff, you know, and, you know, we've got all these hotlines and they can go talk to somebody, but they're not going to do that. They are so hurt somehow that they feel that the only way they can get out of it is to kill themselves. And to do that, it not only, you know, hurts them, but it hurts their families and their friends. So 321 is a lot of people in the military, active duty military, are killing themselves. I never found out if they were ground troops or they were in the Navy or Air Force or whatever, Marine Corps. I think the Marine Corps, no, I did find out. I didn't find out male, female, you know, but the most was the Army. Marines, Air Force, and then Navy, I believe. Okay. 57 Marines, 68 sailors, 58 airmen, and 138 Army. And that, like I said, you may not think that's a lot, but that's a lot. And then you think about the veterans. I mean, there's lots and lots of veterans. We still have veterans from World War II that are, you know, going very fast, Korea, Vietnam, and now these younger folks that are coming in, you know, becoming veterans. And 22 veterans a day kill themselves. 22 veterans kill themselves every day. I was reading about, it's not just the enlisted people, you know, the guys on the ground and the women on the ground doing the fighting, then the Air Force and the Navy and the Marines doing this, you know, and then they come home and, you know, they kill themselves, 22 a day. They were allocated to use. Let's see. They were to prevent. They were supposed to have this big program where they would go on television and radio and newspapers and all that. They were given a budget of $15.7 million to do it. $15.7 million to do it. You know how much they spent? $6.2 million. $6.2 million out of all that budget that they had to do that, and they only did that. You know, most of the folks of the 321 that killed themselves, 77% were white, 12% were black, you know, and I didn't find out, like I was saying, but I looked at most troops are white, but African-American troops, there's not, you know, there's a lot of them, but I was really surprised that there were more women black troops in the military than male. And I thought that was really interesting, because women veterans, especially the black women veterans, have a hard time when they come home, you know. There are lots of divorces. The women, you know, they have just horrible PTSD, and they, you know, they don't have a place to live. They have children they need to take care of, and the women, black women veterans, have a high rate of suicide. I know that for a fact. But these are people who served our country, you know. And I used to get really, really mad when the leaders of the black community would say, well, the military's a way for these folks to get out. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you don't know about the suicides. You don't know what happens to these women when they get out and when they're in. You know, I thought, oh, that is so horrible. You know, why not say, why don't you go get a job, you know, go to school or something like that, you know? But they never said that. You know, a very small percentage of the officers in the military are black. Very few, not a lot of them, a lot of the officers in the military are black. And that's a real, real problem. And I'm just so angry about them using our military the way they do it and the way that the troops are treated on active duty. And why are all the, why all the 22 suicides a day? And, you know, our country's better than that. You know, right now we are in a real problem, you know, with, you know, Trump and his cabal in leadership of the country. And I'm going to talk about that in just a little bit. But I want, before we go to on the half hour, I'm going to have Tammy play another song on the half hour, but not yet. I'm going to read you something. This really, really surprised me. In 1975, after the North had won the war in Vietnam, and in 73 they released all of the POWs in 1973, and so the Americans sent in 1975 they sent a delegation of six people, I believe, to go to Vietnam and to talk to the leadership of Vietnam and to find out about POWs and MIAs, you know. And they talked to, I think, I don't remember exactly who they talked to, but he said, we have no more POWs. And so when he said that, he meant it, man. He was like, a leader, you know, of the North. And so they asked him about this stuff. And then they asked about, this is interesting. They talked to Lay Don Dome, reiterated his position. He had no expectations that any living POW still exists. His statement, however, left unanswered questions about missing Americans who were not servicemen. You know, were not servicemen. And let me get back to where I was. Such as civilian workers and CIA operatives, and thus were not being held as prisoners of war. And we ask about them. And in 1976, there was a general prisoner release with 50 detained Americans and their dependents. I'd never heard of that. Never. When I read that, I went, whoa, I went right to the web and tried to find anything about it. And I couldn't find it. I couldn't find out who these 50 people were and their dependents. And so, like the Lay Don Dome said, you know, they didn't have any military POWs, and these were civilians. And there were CIA and probably, you know, some workers that, construction workers and stuff like that. And so they didn't get out until 76. That is so interesting, you know. it just really surprised me, and I had no idea that they had POW. I mean, they had Americans still in prisons over there, and which is really sad. Tammy, are you ready to play the song? She's going to play a song. Go ahead and play that song for me.
I was 17, just a teenage kid, the year that I enlisted. I can't remember why I did. My mom said I insisted. I had some strange idea then that Uncle Sam was right. Oh, Mama cried, but she signed the card, and then I went off to fight. Got off the plane in Vietnam. It didn't seem like war. With all I saw, I started to wonder what I had come there for. Some officers got drunk at night and cheated on their wives. And the peasants on the other side were just struggling for their lives. Oh, the army tried some fancy stuff to bring them to their knees. Like Agent Orange defoliants to kill the brush and trees. We'd hike all day on jungle trails through clouds of poison spray. And they never told me then that it would hurt my health today. But I got the news this morning, yeah, the doctors told me so. They killed me in Vietnam, and I didn't even know. I tried hard to forget the war like everybody did. Settled down, got married, even had a couple of kids. Well, my children both had birth defects, and the doctors had their doubts. They never could understand it, but I think I've figured it out. 'Cause I got the news this morning, yeah, the doctors told me so. They killed me in Vietnam, and I didn't even know. This Agent Orange from Vietnam, we carry it with us still. It stays inside for years and years before it starts to kill. You might get cancer of the liver, you might get cancer of the skin. You can file for disability, but you might not live to win. Oh, I got the news this morning, yeah, the doctors told me so. They killed me in Vietnam, and I didn't even know. Oh, the doctor said I've got some time trying to be kind. I've never been a radical, but this has changed my mind. Oh, I'd be so proud to hear my kids say, hell no, I won't go. Because you killed my dad in Vietnam, and he didn't even know. Yes, I'd be so proud to hear my kid say, hell no, I won't go. Because you killed my dad in Vietnam, and he didn't even know.
Yeah, that's a really good song. And, you know, right now, if you were on the ground in Vietnam, and you get ill from one of the things, the diseases that they accept as caused by Agent Orange, or you were on a ship that went down the rivers into Vietnam, you're also able to get disability if you get one of those diseases. And right now, they're trying to get our brothers and sisters who were on the ships, on the gun lines, that were getting water out of the ocean to do stuff, you know. And so they're getting sick too, and they're getting the diseases that that the VA says is caused by Agent Orange. And you know, that makes me, I talk to Angie quite a bit, and she's up, you know, in Olympia area, and we text and talk quite a bit. And she was saying that she had two friends who had gone to Iraq, and I think they were around the burn pits, I think. And one of them now has a brain tumor, and the other one has lupus, and he went blind, you know. And so I just read where the government's going to admit that the burning pits, you know, caused some of the problems that those troopers have, and it's about time, you know, that they get taken care of. That, you know, they got sick because of being sent to a country that didn't do anything to us, you know, to Iraq. Iraq did nothing to us, and George W. Bush should be in The Hague. You know, he should be in The Hague for what he did to the people of Iraq. And here he is out getting his money, and he's a painter, and, you know, he goes to different stuff, you know. He's just as bad, you know. He's guilty because he started that war in Iraq that killed all these people. And he's walking around like he's something, you know. He's nothing. He's a war criminal. Somebody called in and said, it was really interesting because I never thought about it. He says, people in the military are only 100,000 are front lines, and 90% are not on the front lines. So, and that even makes the suicides percentage higher. You know, when you look at that, he's right. I'm glad he called in and said that, because I'd never thought about that. You know, 100,000 on the front lines, and that's really interesting that makes that 321, you know, pretty high. I'm really angry about what's going on in Yemen. You know, where they bomb the people, the 50% or more of the people in Yemen are starving to death. You know, this is men, women, and children are starving to death because they can't get any food into them, and the death rate for the children is really high. And killed not only from starvation, but killed when American supplied bombs drop on them. That country's getting bombed every day, and they can't get food into these people. You know, they got this blockade on them. And the United States, you know, they said, well, we're not refueling the airplanes when they're in the air, but there are bombs, you know, there are bombs, and they're dropping. They're giving them to the Saudis, and the Saudis are bombing and killing civilians in Yemen. And I read where how the House Representative okays measures to end support for Yemen, and the vote was 248 to 177 to stop it, and 230 Democrats and 18 Republicans voted for it. And so it passed in the House. It'll go to the Senate, and I think they have enough there to do it. But Trump said that he would veto it when it got to his desk. You know, what in the world? You know, like dropping bombs on children, that's just, you know, Trump is a problem. He's an embarrassment. He has no idea how to be a president. You know, he cows down to a small minority of people. You know, he has no idea what he's doing. And I was looking to some of the people surrounding him, and of course, you know that Trump never went to Vietnam. You know, he could have went to Vietnam. He could have volunteered to go to Vietnam, even though he had that minimum medical deferment. He could have gone to Vietnam, and he decided not to. But I was looking around to see the people that are around this guy, and one of them is John Bolton. And John Bolton is my age, and he did not go to Vietnam. And he is a war hawk. He does not like anybody but in America, you know? He said that the top three floors of the United Nations should be gone. You know? He said that so many American troops should go to Venezuela. He is just a right wing chicken hawk bully, and Trump listens to him, and that is really a problem. You know, he could have went to Vietnam, but he didn't. There's a bunch of them in the White House that never went to Vietnam or never served in the military. You know, you kind of have a different thought about you know, war. If you've been to war, you don't like it, and you don't want anybody else to have to do it, and you don't want the people that are being bombed to be a part of it either. But he has these people around him who talk him into bombing people. And the other one is the really a war criminal, and that's Elliot Abrams. Elliot Abrams is definitely a war criminal. He should never be in the White House. He should be in prison. He was for the Iran-Contra. He lied to the, I think it was the House of Representatives or the Senate. He lied on two things, and he was convicted of it. And H.W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, commuted him. And he commuted a lot of people, you know, that was involved in Central America. And this guy, who is my age also, never went to Vietnam, never went in the military. Never. And he is horrid. In Guatemala and El Salvador and Nicaragua, he was the so-called, I don't know what they called him back then, but he was running it. And they supported every one of these death squads that killed all these innocent people. He supported the Contras in Nicaragua. He has blood on his hands. This guy really, really should never be in the White House. You know, now Trump has put him as a special whatever for Venezuela. And, you know, there's a pattern that these guys use, and they're starting that pattern now for Nicaragua. What they've done to Nicaragua is the old, like they used to do in the old days, where they would surround a castle and stop all the food and everything from going into it. And that's what they're doing to the people of Nicaragua. I mean, of Venezuela. And the United States, you know, thinks that they own Central and South America. They really do. This whole thing is political. It really is, you know, because China and Russia are in the middle in Venezuela, and the U.S. doesn't like that at all because they think they own that, and the people are being, you know, they're being starved. And Nicaragua has a lot of oil, and when the oil prices went down, it kind of, you know, hurt the government of Nicaragua to feed their people and to, you know, have medicine and all that. You can't do that when you're basically embargoed and they're pushing you, you know, and then you have this guy Guido or something who says he's the president, and the first group that was the United States, they said, okay, yeah, he's it, but he's not it, but they're supporting him. Where did he come from, you know? Where did he get his education, you know? Why is he talking to the government, American government people, you know? These people are wanting to start something in Venezuela. Venezuela has Citgo oil stations in the United States, and so what they're going to do is this guy Guido, is that his name, Tammy? Do you know what his name is? Yeah, I don't either, but he. What they're going to do is stop the oil. I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going to probably try to close down those stations. And what those oil fields in Venezuela are really good, and Russia. Loaned Nicaragua. God, why can't you keep saying Nicaragua? Venezuela. Millions of dollars. I mean, millions of dollars. Maybe close to a billion. And so what the government of Venezuela did is gave Russia 49.9%. Of the oil, I think the oil fields, and also of Citgo, and so that's what the United States is after Venezuela, because they're in there, you know, helping the people of Venezuela, and also China. China's doing, you know, same thing. And they, you know, they have very interest in mining, gold mines, and, you know, mines of different sorts. And China, you know, does that. And I believe they also lent Venezuela some money. So it's geopolitics is what it is. And they sent Elliot Abrams down there, and he is bloody, man. The guy's bloody. And so we really need to support Venezuela, the people of Venezuela, because they have a right. They voted in Maduro, and he's the president. But this guy, other guy, Tammy brought me his name, and I just can't say it. Guido. His name's Guido. And so he's trying to pull all this stuff about, you know, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And right behind him, whispering in his ear, is an American, probably somebody from Elliot Abrams' group, are saying, do this and do that, you know, just like they did in Nicaragua, just like they did in El Salvador, and just like they did in Guatemala, you know. That's a real, real big problem. And for, you know, the United States said, not in our backyard. It's just like China. China in the South China Sea said all those islands belong to us, and those islands have a lot of oil on them too. And China went in there and built these islands up, and they have radar, and they have troops on there, and America and says, that's just not going to go, you know. And so right now they're having warships go close to those islands, and boy, that's not a good thing, because if they get, they almost two a Chinese ship and an American ship almost collided, you know, and we do not want that to start, because remember that Russia and China have a military pact. So if China goes to war, Russia helps them. If Russia goes to war, China helps them. And we don't want that to happen. That would be horrible, just horrible. Boy, you talk about, boy, those two have huge armies. You know, they have nuclear, and they have huge armies. And look at China. China's got this huge army. And Russia the other day told the U.S., don't send troops to Venezuela. You know, the U.S. does not want anybody in those countries but American troops, American companies. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. They want the Russians out of there, and they want the Chinese out of there. And that's the whole geopolitical thing that they're going on. And, you know, we have to... And then Trump, man, the guy is just not a president, you know? He really isn't. And, you know, he wants a... Sorry, I skipped from Venezuela, but he wants to put this wall up, you know, on the border to keep people out. You know, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. You know, if they want to, you know, and they cried about all the drugs coming in, those people don't bring drugs in. Those drugs come in from trucks and stuff going through those places and coming into this country. Those people need help, you know. They come from those countries, from Guatemala and from El Salvador and Nicaragua, you know, where that's terrible violence in those countries, just terrible, terrible violence. And that's what they're getting away from, you know. They don't want to, you know, they're not, you know, what Trump calls those people, you know. Their families, their children, you know, they come into, when they, you know, come into this country, they work hard, they pay taxes, like Teresa said, you know, they come into this country and they do jobs Americans won't do, and that is a fact, you know. They do the work that Americans don't want to do. And you know, they have every right to come into this country, you know, go through the process. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to go through the process. And they've, like, closed that process down on these people, and it's making it really, really hard. And the wall is nothing, you know. If they put a wall in there, these people are going to get over that wall, you know. You can't put a wall or the whole thing. You know, you cut towns in half, you cut homes in half, you cut farms in half, you know. That is that what they can't do it. They need to do something different, because that's not going to work. They should take all that money that Trump wants to steal from Americans and put that down to help those people on the border, you know, get more people down there to work to get these people okay to come into the country. You know, that wall is nothing. You know, I hope if they put it up that it gets torn down. I really do, because it's nothing. This country is a good country, but we have a really bad government right now. We have a really bad government. You know, there's no national problem. What does he call it, Tammy? National something. Trump calls it a national... Well, something like that. And so that's, he's going through, you know, bypassing the House of Representatives, which controls all the money. But where's he going to get that money from? That $8 billion that he wants. Where's it coming from? They're going to take money away from... I don't know where they're going to take the money away from, but they're going to take it. You know, if the House doesn't, you know, do something about it and get this, you know, get it in the courts and get it stopped. That's what, you know, and we have to, as a people, we have to support, you know, people. We're a good country. You know, we just got a rotten, horrible government right now, and I mean executive branch, and they're just horrible. So we really have to start, you know, doing protests, and we have to write letters, and we have to call. We have to do all of this stuff, you know, so we can get Trump out of office and get somebody in there that truly cares for this country and is not being dragged around by his nose, being told what to do. When I heard this guy say, "I'm a nationalist," the first thing that popped in my mind was, that somebody told him to say that. He didn't think that up himself. You know, that is like a whistle for these right wingers. When those right wingers started to leave up there, the one guy in the orange shirt looked at me and gave me that white power sign, you know, the where it's like, you know, you give okay sign, that's a white supremacy sign, and he did that. He looked at me and he did that, and so I gave him my sign, which is one finger sign, you know. And but we Portland is good, you know. Portland comes out when there's a problem. The people of Portland come out and they don't put up with this stuff. And right now our country's in a real problem. You know, we're really in a problem with Trump, as you know. I can't call him a president because he's not a president. And he's just a horrible person. And I just will be so glad when he's gone. So glad. Man, I hope when he gets out of office that New York, the lawyers and stuff in New York are looking into all of his crooked deals, and they get him, you know, and they put him where he belongs, and that's in a jail. If they go into Venezuela, that is a war crime, and he is stupid enough to do that. He is stupid to do that. So I only have 2 minutes here, and I'm not going to talk much more. Rattle on, and I'll be back next March, the 15th at 9 a.m. And Tammy, there it is.
Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British wars. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I killed my share of engines in 1,000 different fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more.
It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Songs of Strength and Courage on Sunday, February 17th from 3 to 5:30 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church in Portland. The Portland Peace Choir is hosting this year's Joint Peace Choir Concert with Eugene Peace Choir, Inaccord Community Choir, Rogue Valley Peace Choir, and special guests, One World Chorus with Aaron Nigel Smith. Again, that's Songs of Strength and Courage on Sunday, February 17th from 3 to 5:30 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church, 1820 Northeast 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 10:41. Coming up next is Valley Views. Did I say 10:41? Actually, I meant 10:41.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705.